I remember it like yesterday, discovering my own lump. It was very tiny, like a little grain of sand or something. And I remember the first time I felt it, I immediately thought, oh God, is this breast cancer? I know the shock and pain of a breast cancer diagnosis, of living through what feels like a perpetual hell. But I also know what it's like to come out on the other side. I'm here as a walking miracle. I'm a fighter, a warrior, and a victor. For anyone going through or has gone through breast cancer, know someone battling it. For our heavenly soldiers and for those researchers dedicated to finding a cure, this episode is for y'all. We at When Magic Happens commend your fight and are honored to uplift Breast Cancer Awareness Month. From WBEZ Chicago, this is When Magic Happens. I'm Cheryl Jackson, here with the lovely Jennifer Shea Love Long.
Hey.
And the brilliant Taylor Coward.
Hello.
Hello, hello. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and today we're observing this important time with a candid conversation around what it's like to have your first mammogram, our personal stories, and hope throughout breast cancer and beyond. All that and so much more after the break.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
My ex-husband had worked for the American Cancer Society and, you know, really brought me all the literature on how to do self-breast exams. So I was accustomed to doing these, you know, in the shower. It's really the best time. You know, you're in there every day, hopefully, mm-hmm. okay?
With soap.
Right, with soap. Mm-hmm. But that's the best time to do it. So I was accustomed to doing, and that's when I discovered my lump. And so I did like I was supposed to do, and I went to the doctor, and they did the exam, and, you know, they felt, and they were like, well, we don't see it. So I would go back. They were like, let's just monitor it. So I went back and back and back, and they kept saying, we don't see anything. They sent me to get, you know, ultrasound in addition to the mammogram. And the center where I went said they didn't see anything, and they came out, and they were like, see anything. So finally, I sort of dropped it, but thankfully, I had my annual exam, and it was my primary care physician and doing a breast exam of me lying down. I think that was the problem. It was sliding and it was being obscured, and he did it. He said, CJ, I feel something. I need for you to go immediately to see a doctor. So I went. Still kind of in denial because I had a bunch of people that told me I didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. I go in, I sit down, and she said, why did you wait so long? And my heart sank to my stomach. And when she told me that it's cancer, I just had an out-of-body experience, like my world sort of suspended, and her mouth was moving, you know, like those movies mm-hmm. when the people talk, but you're not really listening. And oddly enough, I thought about what I wanted to do in life that I didn't do. Mm. And that was just to live, to do the things that I really deep down wanted to do. So So that began my breast cancer journey. And thankfully, I was still early stage, although I was super early when I first discovered my own lump. Mm-hmm. 6 months later, I waited.
Okay.
And it brought little friends. And so I had to end up having a mastectomy because of that. But it was early. Mm-hmm. And this was a beatable, treatable cancer. That being said, cancer of any size, scale, or stage is rough. And it's a process. Not just on your body. It's rough on your body. The meds, all of it. But spiritually, emotionally, mentally, it can be a tough journey. So getting the information, it's all in prevention, you know, especially for Black women. We don't get cancer at a higher rate than any other group. We're just dying at a higher rate because we're not, you know, engaged in early detection and getting on top of it. And so I'm excited about this episode where we get to arm women, not only with information, but arm them with confidence to take care of yourself, practice radical self-care. And so let's get into it. So, okay, first question. Have you ever had your boob smashed? That's a mammogram, okay?
Not by a machine yet, but by the loving hands of my gynecologist when I get my well woman exam every year.
Awesome.
She gets in the pits, she gets the boob. And so I think at my age, I think that's enough for now, but I know around like 40, I believe, is when I start to get mammograms.
Do you do self breast?
Yeah.
Okay.
Toward the end of the month, just kind of feel around, make sure I know what's going on there.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, knowing where your cycles are because, you know, you get a lot of stuff going on in your body, you know, hormones. So good. That's good. That's really great. What about you, Jennifer?
I've had a lot of mammograms. Well, you know, we ain't going to talk about my age, but I've had a few.
Just a couple.
But yeah, I've had a number. In fact, I had one recently and I thought maybe I felt kind of like a lump. Now, there, I also learned about breast tissue, and I have dense breasts, right? So what that means is that sometimes my tissue is so dense that, you know, they may or may not be able to detect it in, you know, just one way, right? So recently I had a mammogram and, you know, it is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And each time I go in there, I'm like, okay, who built this machine?
It was a man.
It must have been a man. She told me it was a woman.
What?
Yeah. I'm like, yo, for real, who is she?
Where's she at?
What happens when you get there? Like, what is the process?
They have you, you know, obviously take all of your clothing off from the top up. Mm-hmm. You wear this little robe. You are basically placed in front of this machine that it looks like a book. You know, like almost like the shape of a book with a sort of top and a bottom. They take one breast, they position it inside of this book, if you will.
Masher.
Yeah, masher. We'll call it the masher. And they position it in such a way to make sure that they're looking at certain part of your tissue, right? Mm-hmm. They also put this little dot on the tip of your nipple so that it can dictate where they are looking at the breast, right? Mm. So they smash it down. She says, don't hold your breath. And I'm like, yo, I've been holding it.
But then they do tell you to hold your breath.
They do, and then they tell you to hold your breath. And I'm like, well, I can't breathe. So anyway, they mash it down, and you hold your breath, and it's maybe like, you know, 4 or 5 seconds, and then they release it. And then you do it with the next one. And sometimes if they can't get the image done correctly, they got to do it again, right? But
And they change you. They want it horizontal, your breast, and then they want it vertical.
Yep.
So it's like kind of thinking of it slices, horizontal slices, and then vertical slices. What is that? I'm not a, I wasn't good in science. What was it? Microscope? in science class, you know, you have the mic, you look through the microscope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of like a giant microscope. You know, in the microscope, you put something on the between the glass mm-hmm. and
oh,
then
yeah.
you zero in.
Yeah.
You're putting your breast between glass plates.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they then crank the thing on the side that smashes
it down.
And that's what women don't like.
Yeah. A lot of cranking in female
it
care.
Does not yeah. feel good. But you know but what doesn't feel good?
What?
Cancer.
No,
so come
doesn't.
On, y'all. Let's just put up with
no,
a little.
No, I agree.
Right?
I agree.
About how long is the whole process? It seems
well,
not too long.
It's not that long. I'd say it's like 5 minutes.
Okay.
But what I will say, and this is what happened from this particular mammogram, is that, you know, they detected something, mm-hmm. right? And so they had me come back. I had to do a different position, which was not the normal position. So normally it's like the horizontal and the vertical, and then they had me do this whole other thing, mm-hmm. right? And they also had me do an ultrasound, which I mm-hmm. recommend. Make them ask for the mammogram and an ultrasound so it can detect all the things. But it turned out to be a lymph node, which lymph nodes, you know, we get lymph nodes everywhere, under our arms, you know, under our, you know, all places.
Mm-hmm. Especially around our cycles.
Yep, yeah. exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, long story short, you know, what that taught me was ask for all the things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All the things. Like, I'd like to have the mammogram, but then I'd like you just to double check with the ultrasound, just so y'all are certain.
I bet your anxiety was off the charts when they asked you to come back. Can you come back? We saw something.
Yeah, when they said that, I was like, for what?
Right. Right.
But, yeah. I was like, you know, I have a friend who is an OBGYN. I had pointed this out to her because I do the self-exams like every day
because mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. I like touching my breast.
Well, that's a different reason.
I can't wait till we get to our episode on sex. I really can't. I'm looking forward
different
to that.
Reasons. I'm kidding. But no,
no
I'm
you're not.
Kidding.
Not really.
We're making Taylor uncomfortable. Let's
no,
move on.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. But no, basically.
You can get your partner to get in on the fun, okay, of feeling your boobs.
Yeah.
I see, that's a good thing.
I started going down a dark route.
They
Googling.
They need to be familiar.
Why?
So you were saying, you know, it's good to get the ultrasound also, as well as the mammogram. And then that had me thinking about people that maybe don't have insurance. And
oh,
so
yeah.
I was Googling, like, out-of-pocket costs of mammograms. But I'm seeing that it could be, like, $100. And that's just a quick Google, but I'm sure it
but
can.
Thankfully, there right. are lots of organizations around that
yeah.
provide
good.
Free
okay.
screenings,
yeah.
mammograms,
good.
And ultrasounds. In Chicago, one of my friends who was, we worked together, we both worked in government, and she went out and founded an organization really focused on Black and brown women.
Mm-hmm.
It was called the Breast Cancer Awareness Initiative. They changed the name of it, but they give mobile units mm-hmm. going around into communities mm-hmm. to give free.
So there was a need.
No, yeah. yes.
So
there isn't.
I'm glad to hear that people are working to meet that need
yeah.
because I guess that's in any conversation about struggles with health, there's always that barrier of access, affordability,
sure.
insurance, and private insurance is such a privilege to have because, you know, you're like, oh, every year I can go and get this thing done that I need done, mm-hmm. but
I have bootleg insurance right now.
I beg your pardon?
My insurance is bootleg.
Okay.
Okay.
So translation. Her insurance is ghetto. Okay.
Right. I even said to the lady when I was going for the mammogram, I'm like, okay, just tell me. Is this bootleg insurance?
How do you
she
feel about
like,
this?
Well, insurance? Honey, you know.
I know.
And she hit me on the whole insurance game, too, mm-hmm. right? But That's a whole other conversation.
It's another episode.
That is another episode. But I also, to your point about just, you know, it to me, it's an investment in my body.
Mm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like if I'm just going to have to, I have to find out what it is, you
right.
know?
But here's the thing is, bigger than access and money and insurance, the biggest barrier is fear.
Yeah. It is.
So,
because it's like you don't want to know. But
not
you
knowing
know.
Is easier.
You know?
Yeah.
People roll with, let me ignore it away.
Right.
Whether it's our finances, our health,
right.
but particularly around, you know, the C word, cancer.
Right. Right.
It's fearful. It's so interesting. I thought about this conversation today. My 11-year-old niece, Marissa, she texts me. around 8 o'clock at night. She said, "I'm scared." And I was like, "What are you scared about?" She goes, "I have to get all my immunization shots tomorrow, and it's going to be like a bunch of them, and I'm just scared."
Mm.
And I said, "Well, yes, they understand
that.
They
do load you
okay.
up for high school."
Right. I couldn't say that, though. It's auntie, okay? So I said, "I do understand you being afraid, being mm-hmm. nervous," mm-hmm. is what I put it, try mm-hmm. to crank down the word scared. "I do understand you being nervous, but here's how fear works. Fear is really just a reaction to not knowing what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really the thing itself." And so I tried to tell her what to expect. And for the biggest barrier, as I'm leading a telehealth company,
mm-hmm.
people don't engage in their health.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it is it's fear, whether it's fear of I don't trust the healthcare system,
sure.
or I'm afraid of, you know, the big I don't want this diagnosis, so let me not go look for it. You know, in our community, mm-hmm. you're gonna keep running to that doctor's office till you get some bad news. They mm-hmm. that is a thing, okay, a mm-hmm. real legit phrase, okay. So it's fear. But I think I want to help people understand it's being fearful of not what to expect. So if this conversation and information can help you right size and know what to expect,
yeah.
then it's not that bad.
Right.
One thing I did when I first felt my lump, I tried to go and frame the expectation,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever it is, if it's cancer, I caught it early, it's yeah. going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And that's largely most of the time the case.
Yeah.
We need to get in there and, you know, early detection, prevention, whether it's cancer or other chronic diseases, is key.
And the conversation of, like, temporary discomfort over a long-term scary thing later.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
that little pinch to get that immunization.
Yes, sure.
Is not going to be as bad as pertussis.
Right.
Or rubella.
Right.
Or, you know, those
polio.
Things. But polio, all that. Like, all these things that really can, you know, tear you up. But just that little pinch at CVS or Chulasco, and then you can just go home.
Sources and Methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
WBEZ is supported by Impact Grants Chicago. Over 400 women come together in a unique model of collective giving. Each member contributes $1,000, and together those donations grow into $100,000 grants for Chicago nonprofits that address critical challenges across the city. By pooling resources, individual gifts multiply into greater impact. Listeners can learn more about Impact Grants Chicago and past grant recipients at impactgrantschicago.org/join2025.
When you get diagnosed with cancer, your immediate question is, how did this happen to me? What
mm-hmm.
did I do?
Mm-hmm.
And my cancer doctor was like, don't even go down that path because it's so common that mm-hmm. you can't really isolate it. However,
mm-hmm.
if you have a family history of breast cancer, if your aunties and your cousins or distant cousins, you want to get tested. You want to advocate for a mammogram and screenings at an earlier age. You want to, what I did was I went ahead and got genetic testing for my nieces
okay.
to see if I was carrying the BRCA gene. We've all heard them talk about that. Angela Jolie.
Mm-hmm.
They were really shaming.
I haven't heard of it. What
okay.
is it?
It's a gene, a genetic disposition to a certain form of breast cancer that can be aggressive.
Mm.
And it's, you know, sometimes found in, if you have Jewish lineage, you know, my cousin, who's, for the record, I'm black, just in case.
Okay. Cheryl.
So my cousin is, she's black, a black woman. She's not Jewish, but you know, our lineage is all over the place. We don't really know.
Sure.
But so I tested negative for BRCA, but she tested positive for BRCA. Mm. Her father and my mother, a sister and brother, but her mother's side that I'm not related to, that's where the history of cancer was for her.
Interesting.
I had no family history of breast cancer in my family.
Okay. Mm.
So that's why I was asking, what had happened? What did I do? Okay.
So that's good two things to think about is like
know your family history
and this genetics.
And
where did you go to get, like, where did you go to do that? Like,
well, they,
how did you know
they
to
did
do
it
that?
Automatically. They took my cancer and they sent it off to a lab. And then the doctor also asked if I wanted to do genetic testing. So it was an option for me because my cancer came back. It was estrogen driven. Mm. So they were like, well, you don't really have to do, we know what was driving your cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, you know, the BRCA, but you might want to do the testing, the genetic testing for your nieces. Mm-hmm. And so I did to help them understand their history, their health history, and they can make decisions. Angela Jolie, sorry, one of the more famous people that took advantage of, found out she carried the gene. She was not diagnosed with active cancer, but she preemptively had a double mastectomy to deal with it. So a lot of women, when they know they're carrying this gene, you can make a decision to try and, you know, be proactive about, you know, not actually getting cancer. And there was a lot of shaming for women who were doing this. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're just doing it to get a boob job, which was absolutely insane.
Exactly.
Absolutely insane.
Yeah.
Okay. I probably shouldn't share this story on the heels of that one. But when I had a mastectomy, a single mastectomy on the left side, it was so kind of disheartening when I opened the book and they showed me what the reconstructed looked like. And they were like, get over it. You're not going to look the same. It's just not. So this is your new normal. So I decided to lean into not looking the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went ahead and got an upgrade.
Okay.
Pump it up.
Pump it up.
I sure did.
I know that.
The girls are sitting up party.
Okay.
But that was my way of dealing with it.
Yeah.
You know, to lean into that. But yes, that was the criticism, that the stories that were coming down. These women just trying to get free boob jobs. Like, I would gladly pay the little funky $5,000 that it takes to get a boob job versus using a cancer diagnosis to get. I mean, that's insane.
Right.
But
that
was the talk and the criticism.
So I'm curious about two things. One, you said that yours was driven by estrogen. Mm-hmm. What did they mean by that?
That it was a production of estrogen in my body that was feeding cancer cells. So we all come with cancer cells, but they're quiet, they're dormant.
Mm-hmm.
And the key is, will they become active?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so what drove my cancer was overproduction of estrogen.
Which is why I think contraceptives have, toward like the end of the cycle, it'll be like monthly breast exam time. Mm-hmm. And that's when like this all started to get on my radar, because I'm on birth control pills to control my period, like how heavy it was, how intense it was. And so there is, I guess, a slight risk involved when you take hormonal birth control.
Yes, there is. That is the common thing. And there is a linkage between birth control pills, but it's not what it used to be.
And it's not like, and I think some people avoid it completely because they think, oh, this is going to give me. But
exactly.
I think people that are producing a product have to tell you of any risk involved.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is some sort of linkage, they have to be like, hey, just keep a track of your breasts. But I know people that have told me, oh, my God, I can't believe you're taking a hormonal pill because you're going to get this and you're going to get that.
Yeah, that's not accurate.
And that's fear and misconception.
Yes. So anyone listening to this, please talk to your OB-GYN. It's definitely a lot of misinformation out there around
and
that.
Fear, like you mentioned earlier, because you don't want to have to deal with cancer if you don't have to.
Sure.
And I think people rack their minds trying to avoid foods and like I had a friend that was like, don't drink soy milk.
Or every day they come out with something.
Something new.
Okay, something new.
And so,
oh, well, see, I'm that person, though. I mean, and I'm that person from my own experience.
Right.
You know, I'm that person because it's like, oh, I'm overproducing this thing. Mm-hmm. And actually, food is medicine in some way. Mm-hmm. You know,
you do, or it to a reasonable degree, though.
Well, I don't.
Because you've dropped it a couple times, but it's felt
really irrational. You like them French fries now. I've seen you dialed out this French fries.
Well, yeah, but like even that, like I am aware of certain kinds of oils, mm-hmm. you know, or like it, like my kids hate me because it's like, yo, we're not eating that anymore. I don't say it to them that way. I just don't ever buy it.
They want a dino nugget, Jennifer.
I know. I'm like, I buy that shit. But anyway, I have become very sensitive to what I ingest. Mm-hmm. I do pay a lot of attention mm-hmm. to it and mm-hmm. will eliminate it.
You know, Jennifer is getting to know things she doesn't want in her and in her children. And I think that that's a good thing. And I think my fear was like, oh, maybe people aren't getting checked when they need to be because of the barrier of when mammograms are covered based on your age. And so I bring that up to say maybe self-advocacy can be, hey, I know that I'm under the age where my insurance may cover a mammogram or preventative care in my state. I'm going to find a foundation that can take care of that for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Going out to seek it, just for yourself, because it's solely about yourself. And
right.
I think we're all in different ways talking about just advocating for yourself despite insurance, despite people thinking you're just doing it for a boob job,
right?
Despite because you think I'm just telling you what not to eat. But like, yeah. It's all preventative and it's all taking care of yourself and advocating for yourself.
Right. I agree with that because I think a lot of times, you know your body better than anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other day my
not a lot of time. You know your body better than anybody, period.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah. Like, you definitely know your body.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so even if, like, people, like doctors might say to me, oh, well, this isn't presenting this way. I'm like, okay, but I want you to check it anyway. Because what mm-hmm. I'm saying is for my body, I know that this is unusual. Right?
And Cheryl being persistent with, right, with the grain right. of salt. And
right.
she went, it sounds like you went to multiple people.
I went to multiple people. You don't understand. When I finally got the diagnosis, I was so angry.
I bet.
Because it started off as a grain of sand.
Right.
And I, you know, finally I told them, I went back the third time. I said, whatever it is, you keep telling me, watch it. Whatever it is bought friends.
Yeah. Right.
And I could feel it.
Right.
Multiple, you know, granular sort of nodules. And then and it was every now and then would be this kind of this persistent pain. And they were like, well, you know, cancer doesn't present with pain, to your point,
mm-hmm.
where they tell you it doesn't present. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't know what this is, but I've never had this before.
Right.
I'm feeling lumps. I'm right. getting sharp pains,
that's
you know,
right.
intermittent.
Right.
You have to be persistent.
That's right.
Because you know your body. That was yeah. not normal for me.
Right.
What was the spiritual and mental toll of your breast cancer journey?
It was the piece that was never addressed by anyone formerly. Mm. I mean, so they removed the cancer from my body. They reconstructed my breast. Mm-hmm. They sewed up my body. They put me on the meds that I had to be on. It was enormous joint pain going on. It hurt to hold a pencil.
Mm.
It was just a lot of pain. Please know that cancer patient, once the cancer is excised from their body, the darkest part of their journey is yet to come. Okay, so know that.
Mm.
And that's the piece that takes a toll on your mental health. So when you're in that solving mode, mm-hmm. that's not where you really are going to be because you're just busy with trying to solve problems, set up appointments. And when all that is done and you're just kind of dealing with the aftermath, of toxins.
When you're out of survival mode.
When you're out of survival mode. There's three ways they, fortunately, treat cancer. They either burn you, cut you, or what was the other thing? Burn you, cut you, or poison you. Chemo is poison. Burn is radiation. Cut is surgery. Those are three ways. So when you're dealing with the aftermath of those things, it takes a toll on your body. But more importantly, or just as importantly, is taking a toll on your spirit and your mental health. And there isn't anyone dealing with that. And so I see a gap in care for, and I think that there's something unique around breast cancer survivors, because women, our breasts are so much a part of our identity. You can't underestimate, like, what that does to your head. Yes, you can have these boobs. Is me, my life, or the boobs? You can have the boobs. But still, your identity as a woman is wrapped in that. And there's a lot of other things that go along.
Just like hair. Like, I know so many people really struggle over the potential of losing
yes,
their hair.
Losing hair.
Because it is, like, a part of your identity.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And I was in the best shape of my child. I was fine. Okay. When I say I was fine, I was fine. Look, I was a real runner then. And I had my little outfits. I was barely had clothes on. I was like, y'all gonna see me this summer. Okay. I'm gonna be out here with my whole body just because I know I'm fine. I was really flabbergasted.
Right.
Like you said, what?
Yeah.
I got what?
Yeah.
So you know your body.
Yep.
And you got
to
be.
Don't be afraid of second opinions.
Always get a second opinion.
I think it's like getting 3 quotes when you're working on a project.
Or a car.
Talk to 3, exactly. Yeah. Talk to 3 people. Never just go with the
you
one.
You think that a doctor is like, you know, the authority. Mm-hmm. But that might not be that doctor's wheelhouse of cancers or working with women. And so.
Taylor, you're right. That was the one mistake I made. I kept going back to the same practice.
Mm-hmm.
It was a female practice, all female practice, focused on women.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept going back to the same, even though I should have gone to a completely different practice.
Because someone may think
doctor.
Something differently
yes.
or see it a different way.
But when I did, with my primary, I didn't go to him for a breast exam.
Mm-hmm.
He was a different doctor, my primary care physician, the only male on my team.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who's like, whoa, immediately.
Mm.
You know, it could be anything. Maybe he was in school a little more recently, and that was on his final test. I don't know.
Right.
But, like, just being able to get a diverse perspective.
Right.
And, like,
very
I
important.
Like the word team that you use.
Yes.
Like, making a team.
Self-advocacy.
Mm-hmm.
I was having anxiety attacks, you know, when after being diagnosed, and
sure.
they were having me go to different doctors, and this doctor would know what this doctor was doing, and
yeah.
they were... Not why did you come? They send you to me. You got to go to this doctor first. And it was adding to my anxiety.
Sure.
I had a full-blown anxiety attack on the metro coming back from work. And I thought I was having a heart attack. I told the conductor, start the train, call 911. Okay. You know, I was dramatic. Okay.
I'm dying in here.
I'm dying. Okay. Yeah. So, but finally, I had the epiphany. You're trying to jump to their schedules. You're the CEO of your body. And you're the CEO of this team of doctors and providers.
That's right.
Run it like you would run anything else in your
right.
business, okay? So then I took control. I told them, I'm the CEO of this situation,
mm-hmm.
okay, this team, and this is how we're going to run these plays.
That's right.
I'm not the expert. I'm the expert on me
right.
and my body.
Right.
And what I need
right.
and in terms of support and how I want to be supported. And it was that shift in my thinking.
Yeah.
That moved me from woe with me and a victim to empowerment
mm-hmm.
when I saw myself as CEO of my care team. And I just want to encourage people, whoever's listening, that you got the power.
Mm-hmm.
You just need to pop that collar, okay?
They're there for you.
Yes.
Yep. They're there for you. And if
and sometimes you got to fire people, by the
ooh,
way.
Yep, because you may catch
I mean,
a hint that they're
be
not
like,
there for
you. Know what? It's time for you to go.
Stop
and
it.
Fire fast is
know,
my recommendation.
Right. Fire slow, fire fast.
Yes.
For anyone that is going through this, this being your cancer battle, breast cancer, ask for help. Ask for what you need. Be clear and unapologetic about your boundaries. And indulge in radical self-care. And when I mean by radical self-care, I mean the self-care at a soul level. You can't get through this without it. second opinions. And no pain or discomfort is too small to be vocalized or acknowledged. And that's a wrap for today's episode. If you liked what you heard, subscribe, rate us on Apple Podcasts, and tune in every Friday for your dose of When Magic Happens. And follow us on Instagram at When Magic Happens Podcast.
Don't miss out on the latest and greatest from your When Magic Happens family. Subscribe to our newsletter, The Perfect Companion to This Podcast, at wbez.org/newsletters.
Got something on your mind for the show? Shoot us an email at magic@wbez.org.
You can find me, Jennifer Shea Love Long, on Instagram at Being Shea Love.
And you can find me, Taylor Coward, on Instagram at Taylor Coward Online.
You can find me, Cheryl Jackson, on social media at Cheryl Jackson, and that's Cheryl with an E.
When Magic Happens is a production of WBEZ Chicago and part of the NPR Podcast Network. Our truly magical producer is Brianna Garrett. Brendan Banizak is our executive producer. Tracy Brown is chief content officer. Production assistance by Justin Bull. Engineering by Maria Lopez. See y'all next week.